This is The Huddle.
It's not just, this is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2. The Huddle.
It's going to be one big huddle today, people. Guess who we have on today?
Me.
We have Stacy. We have Jake. We have Dave. We have me, Tom Wassel. And we have one Russell Wilson, the quarterback of the Seahawks team. That is not a joke. We are supposed to have him right around 12:45. No, this is not a false alarm. This is not a test. It is not a joke. We are scheduled to have Russell Wilson somewhere right around 12:45 today. So stick around for that. We'll update you as time goes on here with that. We're going to catch up with Seahawks play-by-play man Steve Rabel later on in the show and John Boyle of Seahawks.com as we do every single week. Let's take a look back to last week's game, though, real quick here, Dave. I thought of, you know, the handful of losses they've actually had this year. That one was the only one where I felt like, you know what, this one is getting away from us early. It could get ugly early, and I'm willing just to kind of write it off because the Rams match up really well offensively with us for some reason.
Yeah, that's kind of the read I've had. I mean, look, they put up 455 yards the first meeting. And, you know, you could say we were going through yesterday, how many games have they been lucky on? Kind of went back to 2013. And I told a story about when I first started doing radio, Moyer and I, the Seahawks were 13-3, and Paul Moyer's an analyst on the pregame show, and we were saying, let's make the case that they could be 16-0, and it was more likely that they were 10-6 than 16-0, because, you know, you go back and look at, you know, so I would say that first Ram game was, you know, maybe that was a lucky, you know, you, what, 6 inches away from losing that game, but they put up 455 yards on them, and they put 477 on them.
At least the Seahawks played well in that game, though.
Yeah, there was something to like.
Right, they did enough to earn that victory, where you come away, you say, okay, 30-29.
Well, and a lot of that had to do with offensively how they played, right? And you're talking about a very different game offensively for the Seahawks and Russell Wilson in particular, right? He had pretty much a near perfect completion or passer rating, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, all of that, and offensively they could not match the Los Angeles Rams or keep up with them. And then when you get in that type of hole, I mean, you've got to play near perfect and have a lot of things bounce your way. Quandre Diggs almost got that thing kicked off, but they just couldn't overcome
that. Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about the offensive side, because I guess I wasn't – to me it was all about the defense and the things that they did on the perimeter and the damn fly sweep, you know, and then the crossing patterns that they've had trouble with. So it was just – yeah, it was kind of – you know, and I thought in the third quarter, okay, here we go, because they got quarterback hits. You get Diggs gets the interception, gets another one. And that was in the same quarter. And then, yeah, but then the offense never did get it going. And it's kind of funny that now we're really lamenting the loss of Rashad Penny when 4 or 5 weeks ago people were talking about
calling for him to be traded.
Trading him away for a third rounder.
Yeah.
You know, so now all of a sudden it looks like, oh, man, this guy, you know, what are we going to do without him? Because it was finally becoming that 1-2 punch on offense. And so, I mean, look, lots of teams go through and have, you know, have injuries. But I'd make the case, Justin Britt, Will Disley, especially, and now Penny. I mean, those are big losses. You had no Tyler Lockett for a while, so hopefully they're able to, you know, get the next guys in there. Chuck Knox used to always say that, get the next best guy in there. You know, we're not going to sit and complain about injuries, but it's starting to kind of take a toll on them a little bit right now. But there's no doubt to me that the LA offense has their number a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and so they'll figure it out at some point. I feel like if they played him again in the playoffs, which is possible somehow, but, you know, I feel like that they would figure that out.
Dave, let me ask you this, because I kind of felt this way, especially in the first half. You know, everybody focuses on the tempo issues that they had early on, which definitely was there. But it just seemed to me that the defense of game plan, that they played a more conservative style than what they've had over the last couple weeks. Like against the 49ers, a very tough game, they were going to be the aggressor. In the Rams, it seemed to me that they wanted to play more too high coverage, go back to that soft zone type of stuff, and it seemed to me like that was part of the issue, that they just took kind of the aggression away. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, a little bit, but I would say, you know, they played some man coverage a couple of times. I mean, one of the diagram to play for the football 101 thing I do every week about there was a crossing pattern where they just weren't going to pass it off, and I compared it to Well, never mind what I compared it to. But it was like a man-to-man thing where it's like sometimes you can zone those off and say, hey, I'm going to play out here. Whoever comes to the outside, I'm going to take him. You take him. But they tried to run through with Trey Flowers, and he just got caught up, and now he's 5-7 yards behind Robert Woods.
Right, yes.
Woods killed him. My God. But, you know, they weren't able to get the fly sweep taken care of. It was like they were back to their 2017 offense. So I felt like, you know, that was an offense that needs to be punched in the mouth. If you knock guys down and, you know, you can still collision crossers up to 5 yards as long as the ball's not in the air. So I thought they could have benefited from that a little bit. But that's just me sitting here being a coach. But it was frustrating. It was frustrating to see.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until the end of the game, really, it didn't occur to me that, like, they didn't score a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the offense didn't anyway. So, it was just
how many times were they even in the red zone? I felt like at some point it had been a while since they had even crossed
once or
the
twice,
50.
Less than two, if not.
They were in the red zone twice, and they aren't able to convert on the 4th and 1. Then they go down towards the end of the game, and that's the play where Russ has the touchdown and he has the opportunity to throw it to Malik Turner and he doesn't get his head around. Mm-hmm. That would have been a walk-in touchdown. So, you know, you're not capitalizing on those situations. And that's really what it came down to offensively as I looked at it, is I didn't see them being overwhelmed on offense. They didn't execute when they needed to. And then when they got into position that they did in the second half, their offense, especially the offensive line, is not built to take on that defensive pass rush that the Rams presented. So it just kind of culminated in just one bad situation for the Seahawks all the way around.
Had a couple drops, too.
Yeah.
You know, that normally get caught. So, yeah, Malik Turner's been good. And then certainly Jacob Hollister has. Both those guys had drops. So, yeah, it was just kind of frustrating. I've heard a lot of talk about, hey, look, sometimes you need to experience a stumble along the way, and that kind of refocuses you. And, you know, we talk on our show, Jim always brings up, you know, human nature, that they're going to look over this one. And I'm like, there's no such thing. But, you know, to me anyway, at least I would never take a team lightly. But I think sometimes you think you're ready, you think you're fired up, but you're not. You get out there and you realize, oh man, we didn't prep hard enough. You thought you were, but you weren't. So I don't think it's a purposeful letdown. I think it's just sometimes games like that happen, and you're kind of surprised by it. You know, like I remember being surprised in every game. I mean, you look all week at what they do offensively. They always do something different. There's always some new formation. There's always something you haven't seen before, and they just weren't as ready as they thought they were.
Yeah, and does that, Dave, for you, in your mind, I mean, we listened to the sound of Shaquille Griffin talking about, hey, we got knocked off our high horse and this and that.
Yeah.
You know what you have left in the regular season. I know we talk about 1 week at a time, and these guys don't know, and they know at this point that there's 3 games left in this season and what's kind of at stake here. Does the sense of urgency get dialed up a little bit? Not in a negative way, but just, hey, we can't have what happened versus the Rams happen again. And does that sense of urgency get dialed up for, you know, a team that's, again, you point out throughout the season that they're the 4th youngest team in the league?
You know, it's interesting. I saw something. You mentioned sense of urgency. I saw on the sidelines. Remember when Bobby Wagner pulled everybody over in the Cleveland game? I was watching the sidelines, and, you know, there was a bunch of guys sitting over on the bench, and Bobby was trying to get them over there. And, you know, you never saw them kind of come together. And it was like they needed to have a bucket of cold water splashed on their faces, you know? And
yeah,
it's kind of what the Rams did to them, and they just didn't respond the way they have in the past. Because, look, this is a team that's come from behind, what, 10-point deficits 3 times this year?
I was going to say, with the amount of just close games that they've had, this idea about sense of urgency and taking opponents lightly, I mean, if you're going to win every game or lose every game within 7 points, you're used to playing close games. I mean, why would there be a drop in – why would they come out flat?
Yeah, I don't think it's purposeful. You know what
I
mean?
That's what I mean. Like, whether they did or not, I mean, I think that they did, but it's not because they're lazy or they weren't coached properly that particular week. It's just because, I don't know, it just happened because it did.
Right.
Because 50 guys got together and said, hey, man, you know, these guys are, it's going to be a walk in the park. I just don't think that it happens that way.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's never on purpose. Certainly, you go into every game. I mean, guys that take games lightly and that notion, oh, they took this one lightly, you're not in the NFL very long if you do that. So it's just not, that's why I say it's not a thing. But again, you know, sometimes the other team is more prepared, more fired up than you are. And then, you know, a few plays work and then you start to get down a little bit. And that's something that we really haven't seen from this team. And I think that's something that you saw. And it was kind of strange to see that, because usually this team, you know, it takes a couple of punches, but then fights back, and they just never did.
The Huddle continues next with John Boyle of Seahawks.com.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
We're back here on The Huddle. Tom Wassel, Stacey Ross, Jake Heaps, and Dave Wyman. Now we're joined by John Boyle from Seahawks.com. And, John, we were talking a minute ago. It seemed like for at least one game, we finally got that two-headed attack between Rashad Penny and Chris Carson that we've wanted to see really for about a year and a half, almost 2 years now, and now that's going to be gone because Penny's out the rest of the season. Do you consider that a big loss, or how do you look at it given that they've won so many games without him?
It's tough to say. I mean, yeah, it's hard not to look at it as a big loss considering how involved he's been the last couple of games. I mean, he had 3 touchdowns and 230-some all-purpose yards over the 2 games prior to this injury. But as you said, they won a lot of games before they got him going. You know, the win over the 49ers, he played 3 snaps. So they've got a lot of depth at running back. Chris Carson's obviously the lead guy. So can this offense still function at a really high level without Penny? Sure. But, yeah, they'll miss him.
We hearing anything about Travis Homer?
Possibly. I mean,
these two right here.
Yes. I mean, Pete Carroll's talked about kind of right now Procise is the next guy up. But I think they'll take a little look at Homer. It always depends on the game. I mean, there's games where you just can't get 3 backs going because you don't have enough touches. But if they get a game, they can run the ball a lot. We'll see some Travis Homer.
Yeah, and a little bit more maybe Josh Gordon starting to get things down a little bit, too.
I think so, yeah. Pete Carroll talked about how they really liked the way he played in this last game and got open a few times, ran some good routes, and the ball just didn't find him. What's more telling to me than the targets and the catches right now is his playing time went way up from the first 2 games of this past game. He was the clear number 3 guy in terms of playing time behind Lockett and Metcalf. And if he can be in that role, being the number 3 guy, he's going to get his chances to catch football.
The interesting part of the emergence of Rashad Penny is you started to see the offense really start shifting more towards that run-heavy focus that they had back in 2018. Do you think in a weird way that Rashad Penny going down is actually going to increase some of the passing numbers by chance?
It's possible, yeah. I mean, I think they felt comfortable running the ball a lot. When you worry about if you have to run Chris Carson 25 times a game, that'll catch up to him, and maybe they felt like with Penny they could hand it off more. Some of that, too, I think in recent weeks has been dictated by defenses that are, you know, you watch the way Russell Wilson in the passing game were going the first 8 games of the season or whatever it was. Teams started to focus more on that than stopping the run, and we saw a little bit of shift in that philosophy. So, yeah, you know, they're probably going to have to lean on the passing game. It's going to need to be better down the stretch here.
Quick question about off the field. Bobby Wagner was just nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. You have a story up on that. What's he been doing off the scenes?
All sorts of stuff. And that's, you know, and you mentioned behind the scenes. He's a guy that he does a lot more than people have realized over the years, because he's just, he doesn't want to publicize it. He doesn't talk about it much. He doesn't put it on social media. He joked with me the only reason he checks social media is because he wants to see what crazy stuff Richard Sherman is saying. Also a nominee for the award, by the way, so congrats to him. But yeah, he's, you know, he does the work with, I can't remember, I forget the name of the organization, but they make the tiny houses. He paid for 9 of those out of pocket to build 9 houses for people who were homeless. He's, you know, donating a lot of money towards buying meals for them at Thanksgiving. We know he picked up the grocery tab at Safeway. He does a walk to raise money. He does camps back home in Ontario. Just a ton of stuff, just little things that fly under the radar because he doesn't really seek the publicity.
You ever been in a tiny house, John?
I don't think I have, no.
I've seen that show.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's quite a show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not what he's doing, though.
Yeah, it's not the same.
You said tiny house.
Well, they are, yes.
It's,
I mean,
a bit
different. They're small houses. They build these, like, little communities of them for homeless people to live in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought tiny house, you thought that too.
Yeah. I mean, they are small dwellings.
Small houses,
yes,
yeah.
They are small dwellings.
Tiny houses, it's like
one
of
the brand
names. You know?
They're less expensive and quicker to build if you build a bunch of these and you can get people into permanent housing.
Understood. John Boyle of Seahawks.com here, by the way. Where would this team be without Quandre Diggs right now?
Boy, he's been something, hasn't he? I mean, the guy, I don't know why Detroit wanted to get rid of him for a 5th-round pick, but the Seahawks sure are happy about it.
It's incredible.
And he's been awesome, and he's really helped settle things in the back end. I think Bradley McDougal's more comfortable playing with that experience free safety. You know, I think it's making everything around him better, and that he's just been an incredible playmaker. I mean, been a part of four turnovers.
He makes those big plays that this team seems to rely on.
He's got that knack for, I mean, it's just some guys have it, whether it's, you know, defensive linemen who are really good at getting the ball out like Cliff Averill was, or these safeties who just seem to find themselves around the ball and make plays. It's been really fun to watch him play.
Is Rasheem Green maybe one of, he's going to come on the show later, more improved players?
Yeah. I mean, he was a guy that he had a hard time getting on the field last year. There's just the depth ahead of him. And I think we're seeing it this year with LJ Collier. That defensive lineman in general, I think it's a slower developing position for a lot of these guys, at least in this system it has been historically. And he's been, I mean, from a guy who barely had a role last year, he's playing a ton of snaps. He's making plays. He had the forced fumbles in back-to-back games. He's become a really big part of this defense.
Speaking of the defensive line, what are you hearing about Ziggy Ansah? I think the interesting comments about Ziggy is that, you know, getting his shoulder strength back up, but also that they're having to wait till the end of the week. And is that due to more of just him saying that he needs to be ready, or is it really going through that evaluation with the training staff?
The read I had on this is more the medical side of it, of making sure, because he had the stinger. He had that, can't remember, it was 2 games ago, he had a really hard hit on a running back.
Minnesota,
put a shoulder in him, leveled the guy, but unfortunately got a stinger out of it. And there's, you know, there's concerns if those don't heal right of kind of more longer-term issues. So my understanding from just hearing what Pete Carroll said is that the training staff is holding him back, making sure, you know, he can run around, he can be out there, but they want to make sure the strength is fully back there before they subject him to contact.
John Boyle of Seahawks.com, thanks for joining us, as you do every week, John.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, and gal.
Coming up next, we're going to be hearing from Perry Fuel, who is the interim head coach of the Carolina Panthers. That's next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to The Huddle. We're scheduled to catch up with Russell Wilson coming up in about 15 minutes or so. But right now, we got a chance to catch up with the interim head coach of the Carolina Panthers. He's actually been an interim head coach before with the Buffalo Bills 10 years ago. He's really bounced around. He's been with at least, it looks like, about a dozen NFL teams here, so certainly knows his way around the NFL. This is head coach Perry Fuel of the Carolina Panthers.
Coach, just when you look at the Seahawks, kind of offense, defense, what stands out about what they're doing?
Typical Pete Carroll, talented football team, offensively, obviously playmakers, obviously at the quarterback position. I'm impressed with the wide receivers. The offensive line is a big, strong offensive line that, you know, can definitely knock you off the football. And then you look at the running backs, you know, they contribute, you know, they play the really good team football, I think. And then Seahawks defense, that's all you have to say is the Seahawks defense.
Coach, it's obviously been a crazy couple weeks for you, I'm sure, but how are you adjusting to your new role, and how much did your experience in Buffalo help with that transition?
The experience in Buffalo helps tremendously, just what to anticipate, who to communicate with, how to speak with the team. And I'm also learning every day how to be a head coach. And so I think from the motivation side and from the football side, you know, I'm working, I'm enjoying myself. I'm trying to make the most of the opportunity.
Shaq Thompson's got ties up here from UW. Just what's he meant to you guys' defense? I know obviously you guys just extended him, but what's he meant to you guys?
Just, you know, he's one of the stalwarts. Like, he's, you know, if you talk about Shaq, I relate to him like you guys do Bobby Wagner, in that, you know, hey, he's a player that comes to play every week, every day. He's productive. You know, he doesn't have the years of experience that Bobby has. I'm not saying that, but I mean, I look at him in that light that, hey, as he continues to grow and develop, he'll be a very strong player in this league from some time to come.
Since you mentioned Bobby, just as a defensive coach from afar over the years, what have you thought of him?
Oh, man. Love to be on that guy's love to coach that guy. Love the way he plays the game. Love his leadership and his passion for the game.
You guys have a pretty solid linebacker in Luke Kuechly. How would you compare and contrast the two linebackers that most people think are some of the best in the NFL?
Well, obviously, I have not worked with Bobby, but, you know, just as I say, as I look at him, as I've seen, I've studied him over the years, and then I've had the opportunity to work with Luke. He's a coach's dream, both guys, you know. I mean, they're in the football. You know, you can tell that they are the leaders of their defense. They have a passion for the game. And so, and that's really, that's refreshing, and that's exciting to come to work and work with guys like that every day.
Hey, Coach, what have you seen from Kyle Allen this season? Obviously got off to a pretty hot start to start the year, but struggled a bit over the last couple games. What have you seen from him as he's gone through this year?
Yeah, you know, Kyle did. He came in. We got on the streak with Kyle as far as winning some football games, and he's had to take the team on his shoulders. And so we can see that he continues to develop every day. We can see he continues to develop every game. Some game we haven't been successful, and all that all goes back to the quarterback more often than not. But we've seen him grow and develop, and he's going to become a good player in this league.
McCaffrey's approaching 2,000 all-purpose yards. I mean, maybe this is just stating the obvious, but what's he meant to your offense this year?
Oh, man. he's meant everything to our offense. You know, he's a productive player. You know, when you talk about him, you talk about him the like that you talk about Wagner and Luke, as far as he has a passion for the game, and he produces. You know, he comes ready to play every single practice and every single game, and he produces.
Just what was mood of the team at practice this week and all that? Sunday obviously probably didn't go the way you guys hoped it would.
Yeah, we have to reset. We have the most important game is the game coming up on Sunday. So we reset, and we're focused on Seattle.
What have you seen from Russell Wilson this year? I know, you know, going against Carolina last year, you weren't there, but he had a big game passing, and obviously he's having a good season. Just what do you see out of him?
Well, as stated, he's playing at an MVP level. He continues to amaze you with not only his intelligence of the game and his decision making in the game, but his ability to extend the plays and find his receivers. It seems like they've been playing together for years and years. He seems to be in sync with every player on his offense, and I think just his leadership has grown tremendously from when I saw him, you know, back several years ago to today.
All right, that's Panthers interim coach Perry Fuel. Some kind words about Russell Wilson. We're hoping to catch up with Russell Wilson coming up next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
And right now in The Huddle, we are joined by number 98 game wrecker, at least these past couple of games, Rasheem Green. How are things going for you out there, man? You are a force out there.
Things are going pretty well, you know, so far these past couple of games. I feel like I've been doing a good job of taking what I do in practice to the game.
I don't think there are that many guys in the league your size who could chase down Kyler Murray in space. You did that was much earlier in the year.
Yeah,
I was like, man, was that Rasheem Green out there doing that? Wow, that was a heck of a play.
Thank you.
That was the best sack of the year.
Really?
That dude in open field.
That's coming from a very picky linebacker, too.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean,
it's
you got
high standards.
Kyler Murray is probably he's the most dangerous player in open space, and you just track him down.
I would say the most, you know, he's.
Oh, okay. Who is the most?
Man, the quarterback for the Ravens. You know,
Lamar Jackson.
Okay, I forgot about Lamar Jackson.
Yeah. We'll pick Kyler Murray second.
Okay, so a couple of plays I wanted to describe, just because I was trying to describe it on the radio as we watch it happen, was the one sack in Philly when you bull rushed the, and now all of a sudden you're sitting down on the ground like behind. I was talking to your coach, my old teammate Jethro, and how he always says, you know, pop up like a piece of toast. But when you were sitting on the ground, it must have felt like forever, you know, reaching up and grabbing. And grabbing Wentz, just describe it.
Well, you know, from the start of the play, I knew the like play was going to be a pass, and that tackle had a hard time with power. So, like, my whole game plan that game was to go to the speed of power, and I went speed to power, and his leg got tripped up on the, I think the back, or somebody was trying to like go out for a route or something, and I like pushed him, and then he like he fell over, and because I was like so focused on going forward, when he fell back so fast, I like fell forward, and it was like kind of hard for me to catch myself, and I saw Wentz in the corner of my eye. I tried to like fall into him, but then Wentz like went up, and I fell on my stomach, and I like rolled over, and I didn't have a chance to like pop up all the way. I just like saw him getting, I saw him trying to throw it, and I said, you know, I'm gonna try to get the ball and like tackle him.
Yeah,
ended up being enough though.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
It's a great play. And then how about the your field goal block the other day? I mean, that's hard to do, man.
Yeah.
Getting
yeah.
I mean, that was a heck of a like a swim move there. That doesn't happen very often in the NFL.
Our coach had this plan where we'll like rush on the tackles, and then by us doing a good job with tackles, by us like giving good effort and strain, we'll get him to like lean more to the inside, and then with the help of the guys around me, Jay Reed and KJ when he was in. He helped prevent the tight end from getting a hand on me in the tackle, because how me and Jay Reed rushed on the tackle rush and that tight end rush was really open. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he flopped.
Is getting sacks and playing defensive end, is it like getting hot as like a basketball shooter? Like you get into that rhythm, it happens once, happens twice. Now you start to feel more comfortable and more confident getting to the passer.
Because it's always fun getting tackles, but just getting a sack, like getting sacks is just like, it's hard to get sacks. And like, you know, the times when you do get sacked, you just feel more comfortable all around. You start making plays in the run, and then you feel more comfortable like pass rushing, and like things just start to slow down, I feel.
Yeah, because you...
That's the case for everybody.
Yeah, the last couple games, you know, you've been a big factor in both the run and in the pass game. And it just seems to, you know, be one of those situations where you've been able to do it not just in one game, but in multiple games. You've put a string of games together. And just was curious about that, because it just seems like you're playing with a different confidence out there.
How does it feel like your life is evolving off the field, both kind of adjusting to living in Seattle, and then kind of maybe how your role is changing with the team? Like, are you putting in any more work in a certain area, whether it's studying the playbook, which obviously you always have to do, but how do you feel like heading into this year that's changed off the field? Because you can see it on the field, so I'm curious.
Well, compared to last year, because last year I was hurt for like 6 to 7 weeks, and I didn't really – wasn't really playing as much, so I would say this year where I am playing a lot more, I'm you know, spending more time watching film at home instead of like playing like my game or something, because I knew I wasn't gonna be like playing or even like wearing pads on game day. So last year I was kind of more, I wouldn't say lax, but like I wasn't as
well. You were so young when you came in, like that was the question after the draft, right? Was like, oh, because you were, how old were you when you were drafted? 20?
Yeah, I was 20 when I was drafted. And I turned 21 in May.
Yeah. So even just that 1 year, it must be something different. Just to kind of say like, well, now I'm kind of growing up in the league a little bit.
Yeah, I'm starting to like do more work outside of the VMAC. You know, I go home and I watch film. I do stuff to make sure I'm like not getting like tight, or making sure I'm like, you know, still flexible. I like foam roll. I do my... And I have this little, like, you know, recovery stuff I do, you know, when I get home.
Yeah. Do you watch film with anyone else?
No.
Yeah. I just don't need them.
Well, no, it's not that I don't want to. There's been a couple of times this season where, like, the D-line has met, like, outside of here to watch film together. But, you know, most of the time, you know, they have their own, like, life. You know, they have families and kids and stuff.
Right.
So it's kind of hard to, like.
You have George, though. You got to get home to him.
Yeah, I have George.
What kind of dog is George?
George is a purebred boxer. He's a boxer.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Cool. You know, he's real chill. You know, he's learning.
Real relaxed. He watches film, too, right? I'm sure.
No.
He doesn't care.
Rasheem, how much of a transition has that been for you going from college to where everything is regimented, right? Like, you're lifting at this time, you're practicing this time, you're going to school at this time, you know, all that, tutoring, to then being in the pros, and you've got pretty much all this free time, in essence, to... And like you said, I'm learning to do more, or I'm starting to do more outside of it in your prep. That's kind of hard to go on that transition. Has it been hard for you? Or just different?
No, I wouldn't say it was hard, but like at certain times I like find myself like last year, you know, when I was hurt, I like didn't really have a schedule or a routine I would have like compared to this year where, you know, I always make sure I like, at least watch like my 45 minutes of film, I do something to unwind from football, and I do my recovery stuff. Whereas last year I like kind of not lost myself, but I just go home and I'll just be like waiting for the next day.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, but it's great not having homework. Right?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, that's it's
like, man, I just get to play football. I get paid for it, and I don't have to go to class, man.
Dave, were you watching a lot of film your first year?
We didn't have film back then.
Oh, right. Very different.
Wow.
Very different.
Well, actually, we had like the actual film. Real.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah.
No funny, VHS.
My freshman year at USC, going into the Pac-12 game, I had 5 papers due that week.
Oh, man.
I had like 1 6-page, another 10, and then 1 6-page. And then I had this little like project.
Yeah.
What did
and
you do?
I was
do?
So stressed.
Did you get it all done?
Yeah, I like didn't sleep.
Do you have to pull an all-nighter?
Yeah.
Those were the weirdest. If you pull an all-nighter, you feel weird for like 3 days after.
It's weird. Or it was kind of hard because it was like those classes where we don't really have homework, but we have that one big paper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Within where you have to read like 3 books. And I just didn't do any reading. I had to like get all the books together. And I was like trying to find notes where I could like, you know, just like write some paragraphs.
I still have nightmares stressful. About that, man.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Seahawks defensive end Rasheem Green. Rasheem, there's no easy way to do this, but like we have to take you out.
Right. We'd love to have you here all the time.
Rasheem's like, I'm good.
Yeah,
I appreciate you guys for having me.
Thanks, yeah. Rasheem.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Wyman, by the way, I have those same dreams 20 years later about not having shown up for class for like an entire semester or whatever it is.
And you're sitting in class.
Sitting down and being like, oh, God, I've got all this stuff due. What am I going to do? Right. How am I going to explain myself?
I had a nightmare literally the other day where I realized that in my nightmare, I had forgotten that I signed up for a class, and now I was failing that class.
Okay, so do you have football dreams like that? Because I have those, too.
Were you first asleep through a workout?
No, I show up to the stadium, and I can't play because I don't have my socks or something stupid like that. And I'm like, where's my socks? I can't play unless I have my socks. You know, just the same kind of thing. Like they say, you know, that you show up and you're naked at class whatever. I mean, it's
yours is you don't have your socks.
Yeah, socks or my
helmet.
How am
I supposed to work out now?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I think that's common, right?
Mine is it's like the so the day before the game, you usually, or at least the quarterbacks, we had a meeting to go over the game plan, and usually you come into the game plan with, hey, here's the call sheet, here are my favorite plays, and go into that meeting and, you know, time to, you know, give my favorite plays, and I don't have my call sheet with me.
You got nothing.
Like I got, where's my call sheet? I can't tell the offense coordinator what my favorite plays are. So that's where my dream goes to, Dave.
Wait,
so
that's your dream.
That's my nightmare.
That's the
scenario.
Quarterback dream.
Yes.
Is that based on a true story that actually happened?
No, that never happened.
No.
But just that level of maybe it's always being concerned about not being prepared, right?
I was never late for a meeting in 9 years in the NFL, and the closest I ever got, I lived in Kirkland. That was when the old facility was back there. I woke up at 9:20. And I had to be there at 9:30. And I didn't even grab a shirt. I had on shorts. I grabbed my keys.
Wait, you weren't wearing a shirt at all?
I was in bed. I woke up at 9:20. And so I just got in the car and I ran. I drove as fast as I could to the facility. I got there in 9 minutes. I grabbed a sweatshirt out of my locker. I ran in, sat down, and then right then Rusty, you know, Tillman, our special team coach, put, you know, a piece of paper on my desk or whatever. But, I mean, that's something that you just didn't do in the NFL.
All right, I can guarantee you Russell Wilson is not asleep right now. He's just not in this room at the moment. But right around the corner, he will be. That's next on The Huddle.